This is Jasa Sagonige,
a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hi, folks. This is Blue Otter. And tonight, host is going to be James Mooney. I'm going to be co-host.
And we've got James on the line. And we've also got a little bit of special music. We're going to let James tell you about that. And we'll be back in just a moment. Well, how are you this evening, James?
I'm doing really well, thank you. You are?
I don't know about you, but I was asleep up until about 15 minutes ago, and stored up energy for the program tonight. I do have clips of Craig Key's album Earthwalks, and I've got them lined up in alphabetical order. And folks, we want to encourage everyone that's listening to call in anytime you want to. Tonight's kind of a brainstorming session. It's a soft opening for Oklahoma Native American Church radio every Sunday night in this time slot. Anyway, where do you want to start, James? This is your show. I'm just here to push buttons.
Well, my major interest right now is to make available the incredible healing and empowerment that the indigenous ceremonies of North and South America can give to anyone that partakes of them. That's my major goal, major objective. And I might add that it's actually a calling that has been given to me by numerous of elders. Most of them have passed over. But their whole thing was to train and prepare me to be able to bring these medicines to the public as a whole. And needless to say, there's been a lot of objection to it from both sides of the fence, from the Native American population as well as the white culture. The Native American population basically has a lot of anger, and rightfully so, and don't want to share these incredible ceremonies because of their feelings, in my opinion, a number of feelings. And again, I like to say, rightfully so, they feel that this culture will misuse them, and that is their track record. Take the most gracious ceremonies and corrupt them. A good example is the sacred smoke. Every indigenous culture, from North and South America to Africa to Asia to European countries, the sacred smoke was, prayer smoke was just the most legitimate way of praying and magnifying and symbolically showing how powerful your prayers are. And you can look at what this culture has done with the smoke. I mean, they've made it so corrupt, putting different additives that make it addictive so that people will buy more cigarettes. And so it's just corrupted one of the most sacred of all ceremonies, is making prayer smoke. So they have those concerns. And then you have individuals that take the ceremonies, and such as the sweat lodge that happened a couple of years ago, and where 20-some-odd people ended up in the hospital, 3 people died. And I mean, it just makes our sacred ceremonies look like they're evil, in the sense, you know. And so people have a definite, or the indigenous culture have a definite reason why they don't want to share these things with other people. So, and then on the other side of the fence, you have the white culture scared to death because of trying to suppress this beautiful culture for the last 300 years. And the things, the atrocities they perpetrated upon them, they have a tremendous amount of guilt. They think that maybe we're going to come back and beat them up, or get retribution or whatnot. And I imagine some people want to Yes, I myself have no energy on that whatsoever. I just want to serve people and be servant. And you save my life. And as Leslie Poolbow of the Lakota Sioux Nation, after he blessed me, he just said straight out, you didn't understand what I said, did you? I said, no. I spoke the languages. He was holding on a bag of peyote to his punch. He looked at me right in the eyes and he said, take them to the white man. That's what that was. So that's what I want to do. And the only way that I think that can be done in a very legitimate and mature manner is through education and not lawsuits and all this other nonsense. It's just another form of war, and I'm not interested in doing that at all. I think that one of the most important things that Native American culture has to do is to flat out forgive all these things that have happened to us over the last couple hundred years. And that's the key, because as far as I'm concerned, the individuals that have done every evil thing you could possibly do to suppress us, you know, they're so built up in their greed and their pride that it's just not about to make that. And, you know, and so it's got to start with us. So first of all, as I'm going to restate, is I want to make available these incredible ceremonies that heal and empower people. And then secondly, I want to have them protected, so that when people are practicing these, and the medicine people that are dispensing these medicines are protected. And right now, the propaganda by the culture that tends to suppress and outlaw our entire culture, these individuals, mainly based with greed and prideful people, have influenced the Bureau of Indian Affairs and now the Native American Rights Fund, are perpetrating their lies to the United States government, and they buy them. And so what we need to do is just simply educate the people of what's going on, and then the whole public will just say, what are we doing? It's just like in 1890, December the 30th, when the United States government sanctioned the murdering of over 350 people of Wounded Knee, the Wounded Knee Massacre. And the reason, and that was the last sanctioned federal government's murdering of our people. It was that particular time, and the reason it stopped wasn't through the courts, it was through public outrage of what was going on. And so since 1918, when our ceremonies and our culture was legitimized and actually incorporated as the Native American Church, people need to understand, 1918, that wasn't actually a development of a church per se. It was actually a means to protect the entire American Native culture. Because up to then, the government, Bureau of Indian Affairs, through many religious organizations as well as greed-filled individuals of commerce, were influencing the Bureau of Indian Affairs wanting to outlaw the entire American Native culture, primarily because Native American medicine people on the reservations, because they were being arrested from 1890, December the 30th, to 1918, they were being arrested for doing their ceremonies. So they left the ceremonies and started practicing them outside of the reservations. And so this bothered the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the influences to the Bureau of Indian Affairs to go to Congress and attempt and write a law to outlaw the entire American Native culture. And that was argued by, and specifically by my great grandfather with the Smithsonian Institute. He was an ethnologist and studied and loved Native American culture, and he argued against it with other people from the Smithsonian Institute. And in the House of Representatives, they actually ignored the arguments that my grandfather and other people had voiced. and pass that on to the Senate. And in the Senate, apparently, the movement to outlaw the culture lost its energies, thinking that it had it all made and done and sealed. But in the Senate, they used my great-grandfather's arguments that he voiced in the House of Representatives, and they ended up killing the bill, which was a big shocker to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Well, then my grandfather went to the spiritual leaders of Oklahoma and said, quite frankly, this is not going to stop them, this win that we have here. They're not going to stop because they have so much at stake. And so the only way that you can be protected and your culture can be protected is by incorporating your culture as the Native American church. And that is exactly what he did. And he actually wrote the initial bylaws, and then they were incorporated. This way the entire culture could be protected under the First Amendment. Now, the reason they had to do that is because the Bureau of Indian Affairs had total control over the affairs of tribal governments. And if the tribal governments wouldn't do what the Bureau of Indian Affairs wanted them to do, they would start cutting off money to them. And so they just had this sledgehammer over the tribal governments, and so they have outlawed the actual ceremonies on the reservations. And because the reservations were sovereign nations, they didn't fall under the First Amendment. And so when the medicine people started going off the reservations off the reservations and conducting their ceremonies, the Bureau of Indian Affairs had no control. That's the reason they tried to outlaw. But then what happened is that when we incorporated the Native American culture as the Native American church, now it is protected by the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. Now, so what's happened, though, because of the power of the Bureau of Indian Affairs to influence other government agencies, they've set this lie, and it's a lie. It's the biggest con job that's ever been perpetrated on American citizenship, and that is that Native American church can only be the only way you can practice Native American church ceremonies or to appreciate the cultures of the Native American or the indigenous American Native people of this continent and South America, I might add, is that you have to be from a federally recognized tribal government. And that is just totally hogwash. That's like saying in order to become a Catholic, a Roman Catholic, you have got to be born in Italy. I mean, that's just nonsense. But that nonsense has actually been perpetrated upon almost every one of our government's agencies. And our public has bought that hook, line, and sinker. Even though all these laws, the Indian Religious Freedom Act, all these laws have been designed and set up so that you could receive its equal rights and protections underneath the Constitution. But because of the influence of the Bureau of Indian Affairs and now an organization called NARF, Native American Rights Fund, they have totally brainwashed everybody to think that the Native American spirituality is only for people that are federally recognized tribal governments. And that's what has been going on until 1980 or 1990, when there was a case called Boyle versus the United States, which Robert Boyle was just he didn't have a lick of Indian blood in him at all, but he was just incredibly impressed with the music. He was an opera singer, and he just fell in love with the peyote songs. And he ended up going to Mexico with the Huicholes and going on the peyote hunt. And I met him as he got off of that peyote hunt. It was kind of like a medicine man convention of North and South American elders and medicine people that came together a couple times a year to just share their medicines so that we could continue them. And there'd be up to 500 people at these different ceremonies. They're not going on anymore, but at this time, I happened to be invited to this because of my heritage and my background, and especially with the Sweat Lodge ceremonies and his sacred prayer pipe. And I met Robert, and he was telling me about how much he loved these ceremonies and the songs. And then he told me that he went on the peyote hunt with the Micholis, and he said that he nailed a whole bunch of peyote that he collected to his home in Taos, New Mexico. And I said, oh, my gosh, Bob, you can get in a lot of trouble for that. And he said, no, this is my religion, and this is my constitutional rights, and that's just the way it is. And I just said, well, good luck on that, my friend. And he said, you're peyote. And I said, yeah. And he says, you know how to play the water drum? I said, yeah, I love the water drum. And he said, well, will you play for me while I sing some songs for all these other Native American people? And I said, well, I'll be honored to. I cannot believe it. And he had 500 indigenous medicine people spellbound probably for an hour. And I was just playing for him, and everybody stopped everything. And he just sang his heart out, and it was stunning what had happened. And I'll never forget that. But sure enough, when he got back to Santa Fe about 2 or 3 weeks later, and he picked up his peyote from the post office, he was arrested. He immediately filed an injunction saying that under his First Amendment, and they totally won it in the New Mexico Supreme Court, and then the feds, or it was the federal court, excuse me, of New Mexico, and then they appealed it to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeal, and they just, that was just a scathing ruling, and the United States Supreme Court wouldn't even take the case, even though they appealed it, but the ruling that the 10th Circuit Court gave, what are you doing, trying to legislate spirituality by race and by political affiliation, because political affiliation would be belonging to a tribal government. And you just don't legislate. I mean, the First Amendment just doesn't stand for that at all. But needless to say, NARF at that time, which is a very esteemed law firm, but is as corrupt as the day is long, has a special agreement with the DEA, if you can believe that, and the U.S. attorneys, saying that NARF will say who and who is not a bona fide Native American church, and then the Bureau of Indian Affairs will go ahead and arrest them on their call, even though it's unconstitutional and illegal, and that's what's been set up since 1973, I think it was, because that's when NARF was actually instituted, and so they really have been perpetrating this BS that you've got to be a member of the federally recognized tribal government in order to partake of peyote or to worship in the Native American culture. So that's a little bit about the back history. And then NARF, Native American Rights Fund, utilized through Utah, the state of Utah, attorney generals, whether it's county or the state, and lied to the attorney, and they raided Oklahoma Native American Church in 1990. And we formulated a motion to dismiss to the 4th District Court, and then that judge, because of the political strengths, refused to drop the charges. However, he recommended it to be that for the state of Utah Supreme Court to take the case. And they did. They accepted it with his recommendation. And it got to the Utah Supreme Court. And what you found out, as the Chief Justice Durham of the Utah Supreme Court says, this is an attempt to prosecute a church. And that's what the state of Utah was trying to do, where the federal government failed, while the state of Utah tried to outlaw the Native American spirituality in the state of Utah. And unanimous decision of the, I mean, how many times do you get a unanimous decision? And what's interesting, every time this issue gets in front of a higher court, such as the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals or the New Mexico Federal Court or the Utah Supreme Court, it's always a unanimous decision. I mean, there's just no question about it. But because of NARF's incredible propaganda and influence, you know, people still don't accept that the Oklahoma Native American Church is a legitimate church practicing off of Indian reservations. And plus, Oklahoma Native American Church is actually an extension of the Lakota Sioux Rosebud Reservation by the blessing that Leslie Fulbright. And so that's, you know, that's my personal understanding of what's going on. And then after the, this is another unique thing, is after the Utah Supreme Court ruled unanimously in our favor, then the influence of NARF lied to the legislature of state of Utah, and also lied to the United States Attorney General's office, and avoided giving exculpatory evidence and everything to the feds, and encouraged the U.S. Attorney's office to file underneath the Patriot Act in a grand jury indictment that I was a fraud, and that they indicted me on a conspiracy that I made up my history and logically developed the Oklahoma Native American Church, and were arrested up. It threatened to put us in prison for the rest of our lives. And then after about 6 months of investigation, the defense attorneys, after doing their due diligence, finding out the lies and the avoiding of exculpatory evidence. And I mean, it's just the DEA had lied in the federal courts. Pardon me?
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, they just really blew it. I mean, and my defenders, I'm probably the only Native American medicine person that has been vetted by the United States government to be legitimate. And so when they found out my legitimacy and that these people had lied to the U.S. attorneys, both sets of U.S. attorneys, the defense and prosecutors, went to federal judge Ted Stewart and said, we have got to drop these charges prior to a evidential hearing. And the reason they had to get those charges dropped before the evidential hearing is if that information became on court, federal court records, that the state of Utah had lied, attorney generals had lied, DEA had lied, holy heck, it had undermined our entire judicial system. So they dropped the charge before the evidential hearing, and from my understanding, what the attorneys told me, that has never happened in the entire history of our nation.
Wow.
Now, on top of that, even with all that, then the NARF lied through the attorney general, who was at that time is a Mark Shurtleff, lied to the legislators saying that the ruling of the state of the Utah Supreme Court was a false law, and said that the we had to get the Utah laws in order with federal laws, which was a lie, because the Utah laws were already in line with federal laws, but they made what they call a bill of attainder, which is specifically a law developed to keep one particular person or a group of people from having their civil liberties, receiving their civil liberties.
And it's specifically against the Constitution.
Absolutely. And so what happened is they lied to the legislators, and so they formulated a bill of attainder, even after all these other things. It's just incredible, and it's all based on lies. And so there's only two states that have had that kind of a bill of attainder law. One is Idaho,
mm-hmm.
and the one is in Utah. And what's so interesting, the director of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is a Larry Echohawk, guess who was the Attorney General of Idaho when that bill of attainder was? Larry Echohawk.
Yeah, and what's really sad is that, you know, the Mormons had several bills of attainder against them. In Missouri, the extermination order that wasn't rescinded till the 70s, and the Edmunds-Tucker Act. And, yeah, you'd think. But, you know, it's really interesting that groups of people tend to become what they hated.
Well, it does seem to be that way. And I don't want to pull out the Mormons, even though Larry Echohawk is a Mormon, and he's a very good person. I mean, there's no two ways about that. And then John Echohawk, his brother, is the president of NARF. So you know there's a combination. Holy mackerel. It's just weird. Now, Larry is no longer the director of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. He's become a 70s of the Mormon Church and the hierarchy of the Mormon Church. This is just the way life is and the way things grow. I mean, it's just that, we're a new country. I mean, my gosh, we're a new country. And so we make, just like a baby, just like a newborn baby, you make all kinds of mistakes. I mean, it's just the way it is. And so the whole thing is that we've got this incredible Constitution, and so we can always go back and correct ourselves so that we're in alignment with that Constitution. And so there's been all these violations going on to the Native American culture, but this is something that's always happened. You have a conquering group of people, and they take over this land, and then the first thing they do is suppress their power source so that people cannot rebuild themselves, etc. But the United States is a whole different kind of breed, even though the atrocities that have been perpetrated upon the American Native culture over the last 400 years or 300 years, you look at that. I mean, during World War II, I mean, holy mackerel, I mean, we devastated Germany. We devastated Japan. And then within 15 years, these countries were just, they were financial dynasties as they are now. I mean, and so what a beautiful statement about our country. And does it make mistakes like what we've done on perpetrating certain wars? And I'm not going to go into those type of things. Yeah, those are goofballs. They're mistakes. You know, they're not right things to do. And so, but we have a tendency of correcting ourselves. And we're a very forgiving culture, to be frank with you. And right now, I just think the biggest thing that needs to be done is that the American Native culture and the people have got to start forgiving. We have to forgive. And, you know, it's a tough one for me because, I got a lot of reason to be angry, you know. But, you take poison, the hatred is poison. You know, you take that poison expecting the person that you dislike to fall over dead. It disrupts you. It curtails you. And so it's time for us to forgive and to be peaceful and to serve our communities with these incredible things, but do it within the laws. And so the reason I want to do this radio broadcast is simply to educate the people as a public so that when they see so much beauty and so much healing and so much empowerment, that people are becoming more disciplined and more understanding, then the public as a whole, without going into the court system, without doing any lawsuits, without doing any of this nonsense, as a whole, they'll just say, whoa, what are we doing? Just like the government citizenship did when they stood up and said, hey, we can't be murdering these people anymore. And now it's time. We cannot be denying these people of their constitutional rights anymore. This is just not right. And that's the position that I want to take, is I want to be forgiving. I want to be service to our communities. And at the same time, you know, these news media people always coming to me, asking me, this is a fight for me. This is a fight for me. And over and over again, I said, no, this is not a fight for me. This is a stand. And any time these people come at me and throw certain things at me, my roots get deeper. And I find out the solidity or the solidarity of really who I am, and I just get stronger. Where the Utah legislators as well as the attorney general came after me, well, they ended up losing big time. Then the United States came after me, and they lost big time. Not because I was going after them, it's because I found my strength in making my stand in my Native American culture. And that's what beat them, is my ancestors.
It was the ancestors, and now they're tiptoeing around us. And you've used their tools to tear down their own house legally. And, you know, at this juncture, you might want to take a breath. Let's listen to John Trudell for a minute, speaking as Jimmy Looks Twice, because, you know, a person outside the culture might ask themselves, why is it that we're such a threat? Listen to Trudell.
You got nothing on me. Don't be so sure, Jimmy. Hanging that flag upside down is a federal offense. I was in the service, man.
Oh, yeah?
No. Decorated.
Yeah, me too, Jimmy. You're not alone.
And you should know, an upside-down flag's a distress signal.
Get the militant bullshit.
Not a militant. I'm a warrior.
Yeah, and I'm John Wayne.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year-old voice.
Have you got a key? All right. Agent Lavoy, the federal master key, please.
No, don't. The goon just busted my door Sunday. It's in the can. The key. Use the key. It's in the coffee can.
Coffee can?
Yeah, the key's in the coffee can. In the hole.
My apologies. I thought that was the clip where he was found in the trailer with the medicine man. I'll try to find that one later. Hey, we've got a caller. Caller, you are on the air. What's your first name and where are you calling from?
My first name is Brian. I'm calling from Kentucky.
You know who this is, don't you, James?
Tell
him your last name, Brian. You guys are
Wilkes.
Facebook friends. Brian Wilkes.
Hey, Brian, how are you doing, John?
Okay. Hey, I'm really confused. I thought the show wasn't for another 2 hours.
We changed time slots. We're going to be in this time slot.
Okay.
To allow guests to get on, like on the East Coast and make it easier, because we're going to do this every Sunday night. And James has just been talking about the history of what's been going on. And
right.
I kind of broke in on you, James, but I did want to get some other people on with us, kind of make it a conference call.
Yeah, well, no problem at all. I really look forward to these calls, because this is what this is all about, is to educate people throughout the country. That's what it's all about. And as soon as people are educated and they understand the beauty of these things, then they're going to stand up against all this malarkey that's going on, that's spread by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and by NARF, and or Native American Rights Fund, and they're going to stand up and say, hey, what are we doing? We're violating these people's constitutional rights. And it'll be a massive amount. Or another thing is when you get people that are being arrested for doing peyote. I got a notice of a person, another person up in Oregon, or I think it was Oregon, and peyote, the whole thing, and a legitimate NAC that's been around for almost 20 years, and they busted these people, and they're not agreeing to plea bargain. And I got probably around 30 people around the country that are not plea bargaining, and it's causing the states just incredible anguish, because they, I mean, their whole judicial system is not to go to trial on these kinds of things. It's a plea bargain, threaten them with life imprisonment like they did me, thinking that that would curtail us. And then when we just call their bluff, and you know, in that movie that you just stated, there's a thing where Graham Greene says to the two FBI agents, saying that we're with the FBI, and he says, oh, yeah, I know all about you. Federal intimidation.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's been going on for almost 100 years, is they intimidate these poor people in thinking that they're violating the law when they're merely exercising their constitutional rights. Well, that nonsense is going to stop, this thing of intimidation. Because you're getting, can you imagine 100 people or 1,000 people or a million people getting busted for something and they won't plea bargain? And the courts will just say, well, we're not going to deal with that. It's just too much money. And we're wasting money. Because that's what it's all about. It's about money. And when they find out people are not going to just lay over anymore, they're going to stand up for their constitutional rights. And they're not going to take those cases like they did. Can you imagine? I was told the state of Utah and the United States took over $35 million unsuccessful to try to take me down. $35 million. Can you imagine if there is 300 or 400 people making the same type of stand I did? Guess what? They're going to start honoring our constitutional rights really fast. Mm-hmm. So, Brian, you got a question?
Well, no, I just had a comment that really spoke out to me when you said it's actually our ancestors speaking and our ancestors who give us our strength to endure a lot of this, because that's certainly the way I've been feeling. There's been a lot going on, and well, we had a situation in one of the Ohio chapters just over the spring, where a township zoning board decided they had the authority to tell them to take down their sweat lodge. The various officials and the judge got flooded with letters explaining in great detail why they did not have that authority. And when you're dealing with the smaller jurisdictions, one thing I've found in a lot of years of doing this kind of work is when you present their legal staff with issues they're completely unfamiliar with, they find it easier just to back off. Mm-hmm. And just say, oh, nope, dismissed. And I've known of this happening. This happened to one guy who actually his hearing was much sharper than people realized in the courtroom hallway, who said, boy, I hope they don't claim Native immunity, because I have no idea how to prosecute against that. And so they went back in the courtroom, and he just stood up and said, you do not have jurisdiction because of this, this, and this. And the prosecutor just said, yeah, okay, we'll dismiss. And this was a case where they actually, it was not really a Native rights case. They had the guy pretty much dead to rights, but they didn't know that. the situation in Ohio with the sweat lodge, they just had no idea the hornet's nest they were about to stir up. Mm-hmm. And again, when it came up, the time for the execution of the order came up, they just said, whoops, we're sorry, and back off.
Mm. Was that in prisons? Because I know Ohio's prisons are
notoriously... This wasn't a prison sweat lodge. No, this was
wow.
outside in the community. And they had originally responded to a property upkeep complaint because there were, you know, wood piles and there were other things like compost. And while they were there dealing with that, they made no mention of the, they said, well, what's that over there? And explained it's a sweat lodge, da-da-da-da-da, part of our traditional spiritual practice. No mention was made until the order was written up, and they had agreed, you know, you're going to clean this up, fine, you're going to arrange this in a way that the water drains, fine. Oh, and you're going to completely take down that structure. Yeah, no deal. No deal. And so James is absolutely right. You just have, sometimes the line is drawn in the sand, and you say, no, we'll cooperate on this or this, but over here, no way. And they have to calculate the expense of what it is to go up against you and what the expense is in public relations as well, and especially if you're dealing with people who do have to stand for election. And, man, they, you know, it varies from place to place, but there's just some amazing stuff and amazing changes in attitude going on.
You know, Brian, there's something that a lot of people don't know, and that is the backlash to 1918, I mean, all that propaganda about outlying Native American ceremonies off of Indian reservations, I mean, a lot of people are still stuck in that. I mean, they really are. They're stuck
yes.
in that. And so people need to be educated that it's true that it is illegal. Actually, it's a felony. It's a felony offense for anybody to practice a sweat lodge ceremony and or a sacred prayer fight or peyote or sun dance or any type of a Native American cultural ceremony. A vision quest, it is a felony for anybody to conduct those if they do not belong to a federally recognized tribal government and or belong to the Native American church. How many people know that? So that's that fellow in Sedona who happened to kill those three people, which is just a horrible, horrible thing. He was arrested and indicted for manslaughter, which usually means that the person's doing something illegal that brought about an accidental death. And so, but he wasn't sentenced as that, and he wasn't found guilty. I think he was found guilty of negligent homicide, which if he had been manslaughter, it would have gotten really, really bad for him. As it is, at least he'll be out in a couple of years. But the thing is that it is against the law for anyone to conduct a Native American ceremony that does not belong to a Native American church and or belong to a federally recognized tribal government. That's the law.
Wow.
And then in Utah, in 1989 or 1990, I forgot the name of the law, but there was a fellow in prison, and he sued the government, sued the state of Utah, to have their sweat lodges. And they fought that tooth and nail, the state did, because they were under the impressions that the sweat lodge, because of the Native American ceremony, was actually illegal. And so he won, And that's the reason at that time there was a Will Nakima, who was a Hopi Indian, and he was the director of Indian Affairs. And when they won that lawsuit, which he has supported from the in the background, you might say, and when they won that lawsuit, he had the prison system go to the tribes to ask for a medicine person. Well, that was the wrong place to go because the tribal governments are scared to death of having the medicine people. And so there was happened to be a person that was in charge of education who I knew very well. His name was Gary Tyler. And Gary and I have known each other since 1987. At that time, he was the Paiute Nation's educational director, getting the Paiute kids into school and looking after them and et cetera. And because of our friendship, I had done a lot of workshops for children, for his tribal kids, in and out of Cedar City and Arizona and different places. And he came to me and said, James, will you go into the prison systems and do sweat lodges? And I said, hell no. And he said, well, why is that? He said, I'm a Seminole, for gosh sakes. I'm from the other side of the continent. Why don't you get a Paiute? And he said, the Paiutes won't go in. And plus, a lot of them aren't eligible to go in. And then he said to me, he says, James, you promised me you'd help me out when I needed some help. And so I'm asking you. So that's the reason between Will Nakima, Gary Tom, who eventually became a tribal chief of the Pike Springs Indian Reservation, and myself, started and developed a program for the prison system that ended up being the most incredible Indian program in the whole United States in prison systems. And it was so good and so profound that the Governor Leavitt gave me the Citizen of the Year Award for leading and conducting that particular program in the prison system. I worked as a volunteer for the prison system for 3 years before they decided that they wanted to hire me on as a find a way to drop recidivism, which I did. And then the moment that I did, well, that's another story, we'll get into that. But so it is illegal for anybody outside of a member of the Native American Church that is designated as a medicine person and or a member of a federally recognized tribal government to conduct any ceremonies.
By the way, James, not to interrupt you guys, but we are joined now by Don Horton, who's a member. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Don.
Well, Mr. Mooney, I've talked to you on the phone before. You registered me with your church last year, actually.
Oh, welcome.
Remembering you now? But anyway, I was just basically calling in to let you all know I was listening to the program, and so far I've enjoyed it very much.
Well, you can hear it from the beginning. After it's over, it's archived. You'll be able to hear the thing from the beginning.
I've been listening since the beginning. So.
Oh, okay. Well, good deal.
Well, Don, let me ask you some things. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
And are you able to conduct your ceremonies and be part of ceremonies? And are you bringing people to your location so that you can serve?
I have not yet. I haven't had a chance to connect with the Virginia NAC members here. I think if you remember my situation, I'm a stroke survivor, and I don't drive anymore, so it's been a little hard getting around. But I've kept up with the activities of the NAC through your all's website. And
aren't you also a veteran?
No, I'm not.
I'm getting you mixed up with somebody else. But my objective is right now we have almost 100 and some odd independent churches around the country. We've got one in Mexico, two in Peru, and one in Uganda and another one in Australia. And we're also with the Atui Nation, which is actually all Polynesia.
Kingdom.
And we have a Native American church of Kauai, which is actually part of the Atui Nation, or which is the Polynesian culture of the South Pacific. And so my objective right now is starting to unite everybody so that we can start supporting each other in love and kindness and in legitimacy. And and Mike, for yourself, is that my heart's desire is that people will start connecting with you. And our website is being developed in a manner so that there will be good communications, hopefully, in a short period of time. We've got a long ways with the website, but it's mostly information right now. But what we want to do is develop it so it's communicating, so it's a source that everybody can start helping each other out. And we need a ceremony, and then somebody will come and conduct the ceremony to you in Virginia or wherever you might be. But we start sharing these things and start healing this troubled communities in which we find ourselves into, because these ceremonies were utilized to keep our communities healthy. And for a period of time, the Iroquois Nation discovered how powerful they were, and they had peace for a long time. That's where, instead of going to battle, you did coup, and instead of developing greed, northwestern tribes developed the potlatch ceremony, where it's a distribution of wealth. They give their homes away, give everything away. And it was just an incredible, loving society for a good period of time, for more than 500 years. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's time. I think that 2012 is to start putting away all this self-centeredness and start sharing each other's love and supporting each other when people are down, and forget about all that other nonsense. You know, are you the right color, or are you right? that's just nonsense. We're all brothers and sisters. We're all related with the trees, with every two-legged. I mean, my gosh, you got to just be more loving, more acceptance, and, be more humble and have a charitable attitude. And I mean, those are just in front. And, if you're really charitable, then greed doesn't step in. If you're very humble, then pride doesn't step in. So, let's concentrate on these other things: forgiveness and kindness and integrity and honor. Those are the things I think we need to do. So I'm really glad that you became a member. I'm really happy that you're on the line. And my hopes is that people start communicating with each other. And hopefully our website will be a source. This radio broadcast, this is the reason I'm really interested in this radio broadcast, is that it'll start connecting people. And they have questions, we can answer them. And then people say, how do we get in contact? Here's a person from Virginia or whoever it is. And then and the website, they can go there and they can start contacting people. Hey, I want to have a ceremony. Do you know who can come and do that? And then they sponsor that person to come. Because we're right now, Aklava Native American Church is the only Native American church off of reservations that is legal in the eyes of the United States federal government. We're the only ones. And we're the only Native American church, including the tribal Native American church. The Aklava Native American Church is the only Native American church that can practice its ceremonies by the United States military, that's authorized by the United States military.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big thing.
James, got a question for you. That law that makes it illegal for anyone who's not federally recognized to do ceremony, was that brought in to protect our ceremonies, or how did that happen? Because it's interesting.
Well, it was back in 1918.
Oh, is that really?
Yeah, because that, you see, the law, the when the Bureau of Indian Affairs attempted to outlaw the entire Native American culture, okay,
nope.
And they failed, okay. So the whole attitude was that to do Native American ceremonies, okay, can only be done now on federally recognized tribal governments and the Native American Church. That's the reason my grandfather, great-grandfather, had that developed. So that there would be an outlet where people from the tribes or Native American spirituality could be practiced in the United States legal. So that's the difference right there.
No wonder I wasn't familiar with it.
Yeah, I mean it's almost like that's what it amounts to. And so right now, because you have these Native American churches that are actually on federally recognized tribal governments, okay, they're legitimate Native American churches, but they come to me to become a Native Aklava Native American church so that they can be practicing their ceremonies off of the reservations. that's how rigid that law is. So you're having Native American churches coming to Aklava Native American Church to go into a proclamation. That's what I'm doing now. It's just I have a proclamation saying that we're associated, so and that I support them doing ceremonies off of Indian reservations.
Well, now it's amazing what's happened. It's really mind-boggling.
Yeah, especially in what we're doing in this radio station, Blue Otter, what you're doing is it's getting the word out. And again, I want to say again, we don't want to have anything to do with lawsuits. And this is one of the biggest reasons why these different counties and different legal jurisdictions will fight you so hard. Because they're afraid of a civil lawsuit.
Yeah.
Not coming down on you. And so if anybody has a right to file a multi-million dollar civil suit against the state of Utah in the United States, it's me. And I'd win. Okay? But that's not the way to make changes. And so forget all that nonsense. It happened before. Just stop this nonsense. Stop violating our constitutional rights. And everything is forgiven as far as I'm concerned. And so if people finally realize that we're not going to sue and you're not going to plea bargain and you demand, and this is where the real curtail is. This is the real difficulty that is the challenge because of the Native American Rights Fund, all the malarkey that they have fed everybody, that if you try to file a motion to dismiss under the Native American Church, the attorneys don't even know how to do that. They don't even know how to do that. And the reason they don't know how to do that is because then they'll be ostracized by the community of attorneys and the jurisdiction. And let me tell you why. Because when the Native American Church is able to receive its full constitutional rights, and it's been known throughout the United States, in all the states, the war of drugs is going to lose on a three-legged stool. It's going to lose two of its legs. Because 70%, think of this for a moment, 70% of the entire judicial system is supported by the war on drugs. You end the war on drugs, you eliminate 70% of people that are incarcerated, you eliminate 70% of all the attorneys, you eliminate 70% of all the judges. You'll bankrupt our nation instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. People don't realize that when people are, they get time, then they get a fine, and then they have to work that fine off at $1.80 an hour. Slavery.
But you can see. So the entire judicial system doesn't want to honor and doesn't want for a person that's busted for peyote or doing any of their sacraments, okay, they take it to, they tell, hey, I'm a member of Aqua Native American Church, and this is, and so this is, we're protected under the First Amendment. Well, they say, please file a motion to dismiss. They can't get some attorney, as we said, if I file a motion to dismiss on this case, I will be ostracized from the entire judicial system of the state. So what you got to do is get these people that will not plea bargain. You just don't plea bargain, and you keep saying, I want to file a motion to dismiss. And before you know it, they'll have a backlog of people, hundreds and thousands of millions, or hopefully millions of people, and they're just going to stop the nonsense because they have no legal standing to arrest or raid one of our churches or arrest one of our members for practicing their religious principles. They have no legal right unless the government can prove a compelling interest standard. And that's the only way. And taking our sacraments or doing the holy anointing ceremonies or doing vision quests or sun dances, it's not even in the same room that the table of compelling interest standards is set on. I mean, there's no way they can do that. And so it's like what they're doing is they want to raid a Native American church, so they go to a judge and say they're going to raid this property. For distributing drugs, because if they mention that it's a Native American church, the judge is demanded by law, okay, prove that they meet a government compelling interest standard, and there's no way they can do it. So they avoid telling the judge that they're actually going to raid a church. That's how they get the thing. And then it's in the criminal law thing, and then it's all tied up unless you do not plea bargain.
And by the way, if you need to take, we've been in an hour now. If you want to take a break, we've got some real good music available.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
What would you like to hear? What's your an artist that you like?
I do that. Anything to do with Carlos Mackay. Anything to do with? Oh my gosh, you were playing some of his music earlier. Oh my heavens. I couldn't think of it. You mentioned his name not too long ago. You could play Father Sky. Do you have that Father Sky?
Okay, I do. It's only a 30-second clip, but what we've got, I've got a minute. I don't have the CD yet with Craig Key's music, but I do have some clips, and I can play The Hidden Truth for a minute and a half, and The Water's Edge for a minute and a half.
Just play anything you'd like to do, just for about 3 or 4 minutes, and we'll just take a break, okay?
Okay, sounds good. I'll take everybody off the mic.
I left my home 10 years before my time, running from the light of who I thought I was. My anger kept me there through the years. No matter how I tried, I could not deny the hidden truth. I still remember her and how she dreaded. Sacred path, keep the fire burning.
walk west where the river flows and water tastes like wine.
Shadow, and I lay dying. And in my death, I saw the heavens of the white robes. Yes, it is as they describe it. But also there, my children, all the Indians that ever roamed this earth, all your beloved ancestors and mine, and those young ones who were taken by the white man's diseases. Do not grieve for them. They want you to know that they are happy. Yes. And you should not grieve for yourselves, because here is what the white robes did not tell you. The white man, my children, will soon be no more.
Kind of makes you wonder what he meant by that. I think he probably, you know, people interpreted that as some kind of threat, and that was one of the reasons for the massacre at Wounded Knee. But I think after the fullness of it, you know, we can see the prophecy being fulfilled, that the grandchildren of the yellow hair have come to the native peoples of this land to learn wisdom and spirituality. So they're becoming us. It's not that they're disappearing, it's that we're becoming all one people. Hey, we're back, folks. And I don't know if James, are you back with us?
Oh yeah, I'm right here. I've got a couple stories. The one song that you, The River's Edge. That was a personal song that Craig Kies made for his transition, you might say. I cannot be real specific because the information that he divulged was in ceremony, so I can't really be specific because that's a sacred time. But I can be in generalization, and I think that you'll get the gist of it. But he had attended one of the two ceremonies. And the second one, I asked him, I said, man, where's your soul? And it just stumped him. I said, you've been a multimillionaire, or you've been very wealthy. I don't know if he was a multimillionaire. And you've lost everything because of some substance abuse that he was into. And he had just his wife left. Everything else had gone away. And he was really, really lost. And then he did another ceremony, the third one, and it was this one was outside, and it was just a beautiful place in Santa Quin Canyon in Utah. And there's a beautiful stream right next to it. And during the ceremony, I said, you just need to go in that water. And go into that water. And boy, he did. And he hit it. And he let everything go. And a month after that ceremony, I hadn't heard anything from him. And he gave me a call. And he asked if he could come down and visit me. And I said, sure. And so, he said, well, can I come down today? And I said, holy mackerel, man, you're about three-hour drive. And he said, it's okay, I'd like to come down. And so he did. He drove down, and about 3 hours later, he comes walking in, he has a guitar. And he says to me, James, you remember when you asked me about where my soul is and what I'm going to do? And I says, well, yeah, I do remember that, Craig. And he says, well, I figured it out. And I says, well, what's that? And he says, I'm going to make and produce music. And I said, have you ever done that before? And he said, no. And I said, whoa. And he said, well, I want you to know the first song that I've done. And he sang this song, and it was called Father Sky. And my wife and I were just in tears when he finished that. And he says, I'm going to make a CD. And sure enough, 3 months later, he comes back in, hands me the CD. And for 3 years, it was number three on Borders' New Age top 10. For 3 years.
Wow.
And he had never done that before. Never had done that before. And that's how that album came about. And when you see the album, when you get it, you'll see it's really something. It's really beautiful.
Hmm.
But that's a story about that song. Then, or about that album. And that one song that you said about Hidden Truth was actually a my life story. And how I got back into the medicine again. And he took all the stories that I would tell in ceremonies, and he put that together about myself, which is really, it's so accurate, it's just incredible. And so I am partial to that particular thing because of how accurate he got. And some things that he put in that I never even thought, I didn't think I ever shared it with him. And there's a couple things. He got that, just as far as I'm concerned, just from spiritual influences, as far as I'm concerned. But another story I wanted to share with you, as some people know, there was a Clifford White Buffalo man, Jake, who was a roadman. He was a Paiute. He's a Bannock Shoshone Paiute roadman. And Clifford was just responsible for saving my life and getting me really on this path. And he worked with me for at least 10 years. And then just prior to him passing over, he gifted me his cedar bag. And then 2 weeks later, he passed on over. But I got a lot of stories about Clifford, but this one, it was really, really interesting. When they first raided my church and took about 12 to 15,000 buttons, peyote buttons, which is a lot of buttons, and they had taken it, and I went down to Clifford, and And I told him, and I was all upset and angry and stuff like that. I told him, I said, holy mackerel, they stole all the, they've taken all this peyote. And he starts laughing. I mean, just laughing. And I said, what are you laughing about? And he, subsequently, he says, well, James, did the peyote clean you up? I said, well, yeah, it sure did. And he said, well, now it's going to clean up the state of Utah.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what happened. I mean, it's just... I mean, they're not... The purging is not complete yet, but... that is powerful, man. That's all I got to say. Anyway, I thought that those two stories would be interesting to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny how things work out.
Yeah. Who do we have with us? Do we have anybody still with us?
Who's
I'm
the,
still
I guess,
here.
I get Brian left us.
I'm still here.
Who's that? Who's still here?
Don is still here.
Well, Don, yeah, good, Don. Good, good. Well, Don, is there any questions at all that you'd like to ask? Is there anything that you would like to have on this 2 hours that we're going to be taking up? Is there something that you would really like to hear?
Yeah, I think,
no.
The main thing I'd like to see is get more callers calling in and just share stories like the ones you've been telling. That holds a lot of interest to me. I'm always interested in learning about other people's spiritual journeys, and
well, maybe we'll
and
have
some
that.
Not so spiritual journeys.
Pardon me? And not so spiritual journeys.
Yeah, not all the journeys have to be spiritual.
Yeah, well, you know, Don, you know, you've got some real challenges that you're dealing with right now, and there's just. You have people that have similar challenges sharing with each other. It has a tendency of helping
absolutely.
Everybody out.
Absolutely.
And
we're a new show and a new time slot, so things will definitely pick up. We're not really worried about that.
Well, speaking of that, Bob, you know what I think would be a good idea is when we send out the notices of when the time slots, we give the Eastern Zone, the Mountain Zone, and the Pacific Zone.
And not everybody knows what zone they're in. By the way, we do have a caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Brian
from
you're Kentucky
back. Okay.
Again.
It's Brian, okay.
Yeah, lost my connection and my browser for a while.
We were just talking about... brainstorming about improvements to make to the program and
uh-huh.
and getting the word out.
I'll be happy to do what I can.
One of the things, Brian, that I suggested is that when we post the program, we put all the time zones, the time for each time zone.
That's a good idea.
So people will know when it's being played. Because next week, we're going to have... Robert Paul of the Atui Nation and the Native American Church of Hawaii, and he'll be fascinating. And he's in Hawaii, and so then we'll have law enforcement, because I'm going to have a legal part so people can understand the legalities of Auckland and Native American Church and the powers that it really has. And Peter, Chris, he is the co-founder of LEAP, and he'll bring judges, governors, all over the people around the country and as well as around the world that will let people know what the laws and their constitutional rights are in relationship with what LEAP's objective is to end the entire war on prohibition, which in my opinion, and he agrees, he believes that the entire war on drugs is actually a war on the American Native culture, or he thinks it's a racial war. He can chart that the laws against marijuana, the laws against AOJ were all racial institutes, and he has documentation to show it. And the entire war on drugs, as these judges and these governors and ex-prosecutors will all tell you, the entire war on drugs is it's unconstitutional.
Well, I do have a legal question. You had mentioned earlier a 1918 law that makes it illegal for anyone not a member of a federally recognized tribe or a Native American church to conduct ceremony. What law is that, and why was that not affected by all of the updates in the Native American Freedom of Religion Act?
Well, it's not worded per se, like it's against the law, but what it states very clearly in the Indian Religious Freedom Act, the first one, and underneath the, I forgot what it is right now, but the statutes of, what's it called? Where it says that there's only the only people eligible to partake of peyote are members of the Native American Church and of federally recognized tribal governments. Okay, there's actually that's worded in the laws of the United States. Okay, so but thinking of that peyote is just they utilized peyote, like the laws that they tried to outlaw peyote in 1918, which they failed. The reason they named peyote is because peyote in those days, against all the other sayings, but in 1918, peyote was utilized in all the ceremonies, not just the teepee ceremony, the sweat lodge ceremony, the sacred prayer fight ceremonies, vision quits. It was used because it was the safest and the most powerful and easiest to administer than anything else. And so that's the reason they attempted to outlaw peyote, because it was used in all the ceremonies, including the ghost dance and the sun dance, or some sun dances. There's other traditions they don't use it at all. But But that's so they tried to outlaw the ceremonies with the name of peyote. So by them outlawed, then when you have the Indian Religious Freedom Act, where it states that it's that only Native American federally recognized, because the Indian Religious Freedom Act just states federally recognized Indians, but that's unconstitutional. And that's the reason for the reversal of the Smith versus Oregon state, because the Indian Religious Freedom Act was deemed unconstitutional because it named a specific religion, Native American Church, a specific racial group, a federally recognized Indian, and a specific sacrament, which was peyote. And that's unconstitutional. And that's the loophole that the Smith case in the United States Supreme Court ended up ruling against the Native American Church and having it's a compelling interest standard. So just with that understanding, knowing that peyote just actually is a description of ceremonies, and so by understanding that, peyote, replace peyote with ceremonies, and then you can see the law it's against the law for anybody to do Native American ceremonies that isn't part of a federally recognized tribal government and or a member of the Native American church.
How interesting.
That makes sense, what I just have to say.
I'm going to have to chew on that for a while, but I think I see where you're going with that.
Yeah, like right now, as we're sitting here, the federal government, like the DEA, peyote, cannabis, is only known as peyote and cannabis when it's growing. The moment it is picked, it is a controlled substance.
Okay. Pardon me?
I just laughed. How convenient. That's
the laws. That's the laws of the land, okay? And so, in peyote, specifically peyote, but realize it also applies to cannabis. But with peyote, when it's in the ground, it is considered a peyote. That's the only time. The moment it is taken away from the ground, that's the reason you have registered, federally registered peyote distributors, federally and state of Texas, because that's state of Texas is the only place it grows, are registered with the DEA because they're the only ones that can handle a controlled substance that isn't part of the Native American church. So when they pick the peyote and it's out of the ground, it is a controlled substance. And only a DEA-registered and state of Texas-registered person can actually harvest peyote or a controlled substance. The moment that controlled substance is in the hand of a Native American church member, it's no longer a controlled substance. It is a sacrament. That's law.
Okay, so when you said earlier any ceremony, you meant any ceremony with peyote or any ceremony?
Any ceremony. Because the peyote was just used as a symbolism of this of ceremonies. If that makes any sense. Let's see if I can put it in a different way. Okay? The reason peyote was named as or was attempted to be outlawed was because peyote was used in all ceremonies. And so the real intent of the Bureau of Indian Affairs was to outlaw the Native American culture because the Native American culture advances itself and sustains itself through its ceremonies. So that's the reason they were attempting to outlaw the entire American Native culture, because they live themselves through their ceremonies, and one of the things that tied all of the ceremonies together was peyote, because it was so safe and so easily administered. Now, does that make any sense?
Yeah, I understand. Let me phrase it another way. Let's say we're in the green corn ceremony season right now. Somebody, some group is going to do green corn ceremony. The people officiating the ceremony are not members of a federally recognized tribe. What I'm understanding you to say is that there's a federal law that makes that illegal, and I'm asking which law?
The law that the laws of state that the that anybody that partakes of peyote or anybody that when they say it's against the law to take peyote for anybody other than a person that belongs to the Native American Church and or a federally recognized tribal government, that's the law that they're breaking. See, the sacrament they use In the green corn ceremonies, the black drink, or Aussie. All right?
Yes.
That's a ceremony that they actually take, an herb that that's your sacrament. Okay? What's the sacrament that the Polynesians take? What is that called? The roots. Oh, my gosh.
Poi.
What?
Poi.
No, it's not poi. It is, it just slips my mind. Well, it's the same thing. And that has a hallucinogenic type of things to it also. But, there's a beautiful ceremony. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Why would I say poi? Shows how ignorant I am. I just talked with Serge Kahili King, who's probably the most well-known kahuna in the world last night, but we didn't get into hallucinogenics last night.
Well, it's not hallucinogenic. I may have misquoted that.
Or psychogenic, excuse me.
Kava.
Oh, yeah, yeah, psychogenic, I mean, psychogenic.
Kava, that is a beautiful, and it puts you in this incredible, wonderful state. And and nobody messes around with the Polynesians. I mean, they just say, you're not going to mess around with the kahuna, let me tell you. And so they don't even touch. See, the Polynesians are just a very unique group and very powerful. And they just won in the last year or so a United States Supreme Court against the state of Hawaii, that the state of Hawaii now has to honor all of the treaties that they made with the Polynesians when they took over Hawaii, and which is all upsetting. And it's what's so interesting to know, Hawaii, the government, and as far as I'm concerned, Hawaii is the only state that really honors the medicine people of the Polynesian culture, and that is the kahunas. And anytime the state of Hawaii builds a building, they will call a kahuna in and have him bless that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something happened in Utah just today, as a matter of fact. For the first time in the history of Utah, Lieutenant Governor Bell, speaking for the governor, Gary Herbert, called me personally to do a sacred prayer pipe ceremony to help with these fires that are going on here. I mean, the government came to me and asked me to pray for it.
Oh, now that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. That's never happened before, as far as I know, where the indigenous people, or the American Native culture in the state of Hawaii has been honored in such a manner. And then the Mormon Church hosted a unification of all religions, and I was Aquaman Native American Church represented the Native American Church culture, you might say, in the tabernacle last year, as a matter of fact, where we had one of the major opening prayers to in the Mormon Tabernacle choir. And I'll never forget that the bishopric of the Mormon Church, Brother Burton, I think is his name, came up and put his arms around me and says, I love you, James. And it was noted as it was just one of the most inspiring aspects of the entire program that they put up, which all these other religions, Islam and Catholicism and Judaism, when all came together with the Native American Church. Jerry Tom played the flute. I gave the prayer. And Gerhard Fernandez played the drums. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful occasion. I mean, it was just wonderful. And Gary Tom, he was actually a custodian for the Native American Church of Aquila. And he plays the flute in all of these different Mormon organizations. And, I mean, we're at service. We're turning the page here, you know. And it's all to do with love, forgiveness, kindness, and wanting to help each other out. So things are changing. Things are changing. I don't know if we answered your initial question, but... It just needs to be worded in a manner that people can understand it. Just realize that the peyote represents ceremonies, period. That's Native American ceremonies. That's what peyote represents. It doesn't represent necessarily a herb. It represents the actual ceremonies. And if you just realize that the peyote was utilized by all the ceremonies, and that's the reason they tried to outlaw peyote, because they figured it would carry in the sweat lodges, the vision quests, sun dances, ghost dances, all of them.
Is the gentleman from Virginia still on?
He is.
Yes, I am.
Oh, hey, just wanted to tell you, if you haven't hooked up with the leaders in Virginia, they're really, really great people. They came out to visit our chapter about 2 years ago, and just absolute delight people to work with.
Can we get him the names of those people and the phone numbers and contact?
Oh, sure. I thought he already had them.
No,
thank God.
See, Brian's in Kentucky. What part of Kentucky are you in, Brian?
I'm in the very western part of Kentucky.
Okay.
But
well.
Sure. Shall I just email that contact information to Will?
Yeah, I can. I don't have. Have you got? Our brother from Virginia. What was your name again?
Don Warden. W A R D E N.
Can you find your way to NativeAmericanChurch.us and shoot us an email? Oh, by the way, that's the new domain name for the Oklahoma Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace. And I just fixed up the website to reflect that today. And
okay.
But yeah, shoot us an email and I'll get you together with Brian.
Okay, NativeAmericanChurch.us.
.us.
and we have
right now.
Great. And our chapter is on thenativeamericanchurch.com.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you can just remember webmaster@prophecykeepers.com, that'll get to me.
Okay, good enough.
Don, I want you to know you've made this 2 hours extremely successful. We get one person that gets connected, and as I stated right from the beginning, this is my major objective, is to get people connected so they can start experiencing these ceremonies on a regular basis and really cure and assist people to find more peace and harmony in this life. It just so this brings joy to me that now you're getting to more people.
Yeah, it's a good time for people. Go ahead. I'm sorry. No.
That's all right. Go ahead.
It's just a good time that people know that they can call in and they can ask questions and whether they're a member of the church or not. And eventually we'll get a big mailing list with people from all the dispensaries around the country, and we'll really plow through things. And who knows? This is the kind of program that could become end up getting syndicated.
I think if we set things up in the manner that, or something similar to the manner that I shot over to you, Roder, I think.
It'll be like NPR. Well, now let me share with you the very first interview I did on Prophecy Keepers Radio was with Gordon Banta. Gordon was a professional psychic. And he was on the payroll of major corporations, particularly Japanese ones. And he told he did a reading for my wife and I. And one of the things he said was that he said someday he says you're going to be on the radio in the Southwest, and that indicated to me. He says not just internet radio. He says terrestrial radio. So. Been waiting for a fulfillment of that. And I can see this this program going that way.
Yeah, I did too. I think that the subject is ripe to be shown to people, and I think it's really you got to know something else is working here. Our
answers
are working. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, everything is owned to our ancestors. You think about the sacrifices that they've done and that they did and to maintain these things. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. The things that they've gone through. Oh, my gosh. I remember I was in Mexico at the Sierra. I was coming out of the Sierra Madre mountain range, and I was sitting with some Tarahumaras, and they were just telling me the way they survived is that they ran away from the conquistadors, because they said if you were known to take peyote, they killed you immediately. They considered taking peyote worse than murder. And so they would talk about it. And then they found different ways because of the conquistadors kind of had an eye for the Native American women, and so they started teaching them how to survive. And there's a circle kind of a for their swords. It was like a circle, but it had like a it was for a cross. It looked like a cross, but it was actually a circle. And but with the blade of the sword, it was a cross. But without the blade of the sword, it was like it was a medicine wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And so what people would do to keep themselves from being prosecuted or persecuted, they would get a stick that represented and then put the circle with the medicine wheel and then put the stick inside the ground, and the conquistadors or inside the ground outside their doorway to their homes, and that way the conquistadors would think that they were actually Christians when they really were talking giving an example of the sacred medicine wheel. I mean, the thing that they did to survive was it's mind-boggling.
Well, years ago, and we'll be replaying the interview with Eduardo Holman, who's a student of Curandismo. He said it was very, very common for natives down in Mexico and elsewhere. They would have their ceremonial items in a hidden place under the Catholic altar, and
yeah.
And when the priest was otherwise engaged, they'd do ceremony and they play this game. But they did whatever they could.
Yeah, Leslie Forbwell, Lakota Sioux Road Man. I mean, he was a flipping genius on how he did things and how he survived and was able to survive. Was because there's two different types of teepee ceremonies, or actually more, but the basic two was the half moon ceremony, and then there was the cross moon ceremony. And the cross moon ceremony had a lot of implications of Christianity. You would have a Bible, and there's a lot of Christians and praying to Jesus and things like that. Well, he did both. He did the cross moon ceremony for the Rosebud governmental people, but then in quietness and silence and in secret, he would do the half moon ceremony. So he did both, but he didn't have any Christian type of movements at all. And that's one of the reasons that the cross moon ceremony came in. It wasn't developed by Quan and Parker. I forgot who the other fellow was that was a friend of his and that really promoted the peyote ceremonies, the teepee peyote ceremonies.
Jack
but,
Wilson.
What?
It was Jack Wilson. He was a Delaware.
That's exactly right, Jack Wilson. And he formulated the cross moon ceremony so that it would make appeasement with the Christian people that are trying to, which didn't work, but nevertheless, that's what he was trying to do. And so the way Leslie Forbwell did, he did both. He appeased everybody. he was a smart guy. And boy, I tell you, when he blessed me and blessed Occo of the Native American Church, that upset the Bureau of Indian Affairs like you have no idea. There was about 15 people that were there, and they put the one person's his son is in prison at trumped up charges. Because he was going to follow Leslie Forbwell's desire to take this peyote to the white man. And so the Bureau of Indian Affairs got him thrown in prison, threatened everybody else with the same thing. And so they tried to deny it. But if Leslie Forbwell had not written out in document, wrote out the date and and signed it with two other witnesses, nobody would have known about that blessing. And when my federal attorneys interviewed these people that were there, they said, holy mackerel, James, the Bureau of Indian Affairs has done everything trying to keep people from admitting that that blessing ever took place. And that was the final straw that they they had on realizing this conspiracy of trying to take me down, the lies that they had done, and when they all of the efforts that they did to try to get 12 to 15 people to deny that blessing, they just said this corruption is just too much, and that's when they took it to the prosecuting attorneys, and that's the reason they got that thing dismissed. It's just corruption is so deep, it's incredible.
Wow. How
interesting. I tell you guys, this con game, or what was Amaroff's, what did he say he did? He went to prison for gaming?
Jack Abramoff.
Yeah. What's been going on by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and NARF, the American Rights Fund?
I don't know.
Makes him look like some kindergarten crook.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because this has been going on since 1918. Precisely going on. 1918. The billions and millions of dollars and the heartache and the families that have been disrupted, it's darn near unforgivable. Unforgivable.
Well, we got them.
I got to tell you, the only thing that I know of that can bring us to a halt is through love, patience, and forgiveness. And forget about lawsuits, forget about grandstanding demonstrations, none of that. We start showing how powerful these things are in spreading goodness and beauty, and then you'll get the entire Native American or the entire citizenship of the United States saying, what are we doing? What are we depriving these people of their constitutional rights? That's how to do it, guys. Yeah, we got about 10 more minutes.
Yeah, we can go as long as you want. We've got.
Well, Don or Brian, you guys have anything else you'd like to talk about?
Can't think of anything right now.
I would just like to ask for some prayers for the daughter of one of my Ecuadorian teachers. A week ago today, she and her two small children were among a group of people waiting at a bus stop in Quito, Ecuador, and a drunk driver came up on the sidewalk, plowed into everybody, killed four people, including her two children, and she lost an arm. She's been fighting for her life this week, and tomorrow morning they're going to psychologists have decided that she's ready to be told her children died. And so the family has asked for a lot of prayers of support.
Hello?
Hello?
We lost them.
Are we still hooked up?
I felt this. Is that you, James?
I'm here. Don, I guess it's just you and I, huh?
Yeah, I think we lost the connection to everybody else.
Well, that's just the way it happens sometimes.
Well,
we're still connected. Well, Don, let me tell you, we might as well come to a close now, but I'm sure glad that you came on, and we're going to... How did you find out that we're on?
Actually, through the Facebook page, somebody I was talking to on Facebook told me about it.
Fantastic. Well, tell your friends, tell everybody, and we'll be online next Sunday again, and it will have a little bit more. We're just kind of hanging loose here and just doing whatever came up, and we'll have a
a program really going, and have I know that we'll have Robert Paul, and then we'll have Peter Griff of Leap, and it's going to be quite interesting next year.
Just so you remember who I am, James, I'm the guy who you gave a membership to because I couldn't afford it, and I really wanted to thank you for that again.
Well, you sure will.
I really appreciated that.
Well, it's my honor, Don. It's my honor.
Thank you.
And,
thank you very much.
And I'm so happy that you made a connection here, and so that you can start being visited by some of these people, and you'll have access to this wonderful culture. It's just it has so much beauty to it.
I'm well aware of that. I've actually been a part of the culture for many, many years. I'm just not a member of an organized church, though.
So.
Well, again, I appreciate it, and I'll talk to you again next week.
You got it. Okay, Blue Otto, are you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, fantastic.
Sorry.
I lost you for...
Yeah, I was in the screening room. I was trying to get a hold of Chamaqua. I just got an email from Virginia, including a phone number. I figure I'd try to...
That's me.
Oh, okay, I got you. Oh, that was you. Okay, now I know. Okay, so now I've got... I will send over the Chamaqua at BigBearsDen.org, and I will send over the information that Brian just sent to me, and so you'll have that in your mailbox, like, right about now.
All right.
Very good. Okay, I was trying to call you, and you're already on the line. Okay, there you go. It's in your mailbox.
Lou, I don't, you know what might be a good thing?
What's that?
Is somehow we organize a moment of prayer for people that are calling in and asking for prayers, and then we have actually a period of time where we actually put up a prayer right then and there.
Absolutely, and there is another person on Blog Talk Radio that's all they do. They're it's a Native American Church prayer line, and we'll see if we can attract them to come on over.
Would be wonderful.
I do have a very special song that you probably have not heard. I'm not sure I played it the last time or not, but I'm an alumnus of Up With People. Traveled all over the world back in the early 70s. And Frank Fields wrote a song, recorded it the year that I was in. And by the way, we had our own traveling high school, and we held our graduation in the basement of the Smithsonian Institution. And did a show at Wolf Trap Farm Park before we disbanded. But when you're ready, I want to spin this song. It's called "In a Sacred Manner I Live," and we could take the show out with that.
Okay. Before you start that, I want to reiterate this group that does a Native American church that does online prayers, and let's give them. At a half an hour, and so that they can conduct something like that.
Absolutely.
What's that
like? They are, if you just go to Blog Talk Radio, you can do a search for Native American Church, and it will pop up as Native American Church prayer line, and I'll contact them and let them know that that we want them to come join us. They probably want us to come join them, too.
I think that's just a beautiful thing. I mean, this thing that Brian shared with us, oh, my gosh, that's heart-wrenching. And I just immediately started praying for her.
Yeah, it was really sad.
Yeah. So let's hear your closing song, and it'll be good. And God bless you guys, Don and Brian, if you're still on. I'm sure glad to make a connection with you guys. And we'll definitely be talking next week. And let's publish... each time zone next time,
so
people know what's going on, especially because we're going to have somebody from the East Coast, and we're going to have somebody from Hawaii and Midwest and Mideast. So we need some coordination time.
Absolutely, and this is what this is what the old White Roots of Peace Council wanted to do. They wanted to have regular meetings in all four corners of the country, and it's all coming together.
It sure is.
Guys, be sure and visit NativeAmericanChurch.us, and if you have any suggestions or criticism, let me know.
Thank you all.
You bet. Thanks.
Thank
a lot.
You.
And
good night.
We'll go ahead and close out, and thanks a lot for being on the show, James, and we'll see you the next week at the same time. Bye-bye now.
This is Jasa Sagonige,
a seventh-grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Oh, yeah.
Let the truth